Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 22, continuing our segment of the Disney Movie Hour. This week we're going to take a look at the 1941 classic Dumbo. To my left, as always, is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Across from me is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. That was Upular by Pogo. You can find his videos over on youtube.com/Pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix, and his web address is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod, D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you'll find our little group that you can join up and add your friends and family to that as well. And on iTunes, if you search for us, Disney Magic Hour. You hop on over there, hit the subscribe button, a 5-star review, if you please. Very, very helpful. Brian, how can I help you?
Google, too.
You're a Google.
You did the Google thing.
You're a Google.
Google.
It's not up yet.
No, but just so they know it when it comes up.
I had it in the thing.
Oh.
I have it in my notes.
Well, I don't know.
I have it in my notes.
The first time that we were doing it, so don't
make me
forget.
No, so everyone knows, we applied and got accepted onto Google Play, which is going to be hosting podcasts for you Android users out there. So a wave of the future has hit the Android phone podcasts. They were able to figure out how to play audio MP3s.
Huzzah.
Great job. Only took like 5 years. So weird that it took this long for something so silly. There's no particular release date, though, yet for any of this stuff. Google in the return email was basically like, we'll let you know. Bye. And that was pretty much it. So when we know, we'll let everyone else know. And I'm sure that you'll hear it from many other, if you listen to any other shows, I'm sure you're going to hear it around roundabout and all that. So yes, we will now be a little more easier to listen to for our Android listeners. Because if I've gotten one email more than once, it is, I have an Android. How do I listen to the show? And I never really had a good answer for it. The answer was basically go to the website and hit play and then never turn your phone off because it's an active, you know, web page. So a lot easier, obviously, will be coming in the near future. So that's that. A couple of little notes. Next Tuesday, November 10th, I am going to be attending the 75th anniversary screening of Fantasia at Island 16. In Holtsville, here in Long Island, New York. So if anyone is interested in joining, that's Tuesday, November 10th, 7 o'clock. I don't know if anyone else is going. Melissa, I know you have dentistry.
Yeah.
Look at you act like it's the worst thing. Like you're really sacrificing.
Of course it's terrible.
I know, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. It is really like the most medieval still thing that we haven't really figured out yet. There should just be lasers, and that's it. But actually, it's Tuesday now. Do you want to go? Because you were busy on Wednesday. You weren't busy on Tuesday.
I don't know. We'll talk about it later.
Brian, what about you? You going to go with us?
Yeah, I think I might. I got to see because Tuesdays is Kyle's busy day. So as long as I have people, I can shuffle him around.
Lots of meetings.
He has lots of meetings. He does. He has many more things to do than I, which is the scary thing because he's 8. So.
All right. Well, hopefully you can do that and then I just won't be there by my onesies. But regardless, I'm going because it's Fantasia. And if you've listened to the show before, I don't need to explain that. A little correction from last week. We had a little bit of an error on my part. We were talking about Reluctant Dragon, and Francis Gifford makes an appearance in the film. I had read, or I had misread, obviously, that Frank Gifford was her wife. That's a mistake, too.
They were not married.
They were siblings. So thank you, Ray, for that little heads up over there on that that miscue on me. I swear it said spouse, but then I went to the same page and I'm like, clearly doesn't say spouse. I'm like, that says someone else's name totally.
Yeah. Well, Kathy Lee Gifford, right?
Yeah, but I thought it was an earlier marriage.
An earlier marriage.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was just an earlier marriage. Because even It was actually, it was tough to find. Me and the guy who emailed me about it, Ray, we were trying to find like how exactly Francis and Frank were siblings, and we couldn't even lock down that information.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it wasn't really clear. Like, I kind of feel like they may have just had the same father, not the same mother.
Oh, okay, so like half siblings.
Step yeah, because also there was quite an age difference between the two as well.
So maybe different mothers.
Possibly, but we also know somebody who, you know...
That's true. They
know,
can.
His
yeah.
father served in World War II, but he's our age, yeah. which is, you know, mid-30s.
I mean, even Peter and Andrew, there's a 12-year age difference there, so...
Yeah, those are also relatives of ours.
Yeah.
okay, so this week we are going to talk about Dumbo, and as we have in the past, we're going to go over the whole film, basically, you know, go over the main scenes of the film itself. And at the conclusion, we're going to ask three specific questions. What is the iconic shot of the film? Does the film hold up? And is it a morals film or an emotion film? And I think this week that question gets a little more interesting than maybe the clear-cut ones that we've had in previous. A little bit of background on Dumbo. This was actually, you know, the animated films are usually directed by multiple people at this time. They're always kind of attributed to, oh, he did this sequence, you know, this person did this sequence, mm-hmm. yada, yada. So there were a number of different directors on this, and I wrote down some information on a couple of them because I thought they were really kind of interesting. Samuel Armstrong also directed segments in Fantasia, in particular Toccata and Fugue in D minor and the Nutcracker Suite. He was also a sequence director in Bambi and a background artist on The Old Mill, so he's got a lot of roots. You'll notice that, too. Once you start looking into these people's background, they have Disney roots all over the place. Norm Ferguson was also listed as a director on here. He directed Three Caballeros, also The Dance of Hours in Fantasia, and Pinocchio. He was sequence director in that as well. Additionally, Wilfred Jackson, who has over 60 directorial credits to his name, including Alice in Wonderland, Cinderella, Peter Pan, and Lady and the Tramp. So he had quite the Disney career. And a lot of those is... Those seem to start when it's like a singular director. It's not seven people listed under director. Like yeah. it's directed by boom.
Right.
Jack Kinney was also a director on this. He has 80 directorial credits to his name, many of them shorts. Bill Roberts was another, had 17 credits. And Ben Sharpstein, who won two Oscars in the same year. He was Best Documentary Short Subject for the AMA Girls, or AMA Girls. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, if there is a pronunciation exactly for that. That was produced by Disney, by the way. And he also won for Documentary Feature for White Wilderness, which was also produced by Disney. So I thought that was pretty interesting, a whole lot of background into that. And then just looking a little bit further in, I know that we were talking last week with the Disney, with the strike.
Yeah.
Well, this has, you know, some things going on with the strike as well. And we're going to get into the scene with the clowns,
mm-hmm.
where the clowns are all clamoring about how they got to make more money and they're going to, quote, hit the big boss for a raise.
Ah. Mm.
That was done on purpose.
Yeah.
That was a very purposeful thing that was done in a very direct way against the, you know, the people who were speaking strike. What I found interesting was... They obviously got artists who were not on that side of the yeah. fence to do the animation for that, because they all probably would have been like, hey, wait a minute, what? This was one of the first two films released on home video, along with Alice in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. Remember VHS and Betamax?
Yeah.
Wow. So, that's crazy. And you know what? We'll get to the... There is a little bit of controversy with this film. You might know, obviously, the crows are in the film. One of them was originally named Jim Crow. Guess what? That didn't stick for obvious reasons. He was also, you know, voiced by a white man, Cliff Edwards, at the time. And the rest of the crows were voiced by the Hal Johnson Choir, which was basically a, you know, a group that traveled together under Hal Johnson's directorial, you know, musical notes. And I thought that it was, you know... People have kind of, you know, brought up the idea that that's, you know, kind of racist and whatnot. The idea of the crows and Jim Crow.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because for me, the crows in the movie are like the best spirited characters. Everyone else besides Dumbo and Timothy are miserable human beings or elephants.
Yeah.
They're like the darkest side of awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for the crows, nobody outside of Timothy and his mother would have been nice to Dumbo. And they really are the reason that he flies.
Yeah, and he succeeds and stuff.
So it's interesting. I can see where it comes from, that feeling, but I don't think that it follows through. And there is a song. I mean, it's the worker song.
I remember listening to those lyrics. They were interesting.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I'm trying to get the name of the song.
The one where they're putting the tent up?
Yeah.
It's in the beginning.
Yeah, the Roustabout song, when everyone sleeps, I work like a slave all day, and it's all black characters, and I spend my money as soon as I get it, throw my money away. It's some pretty harsh stuff, but again, they are like the most stalwart characters, as in, no matter what, I'm doing my job, and this is my time, and it's the most striking visually.
It's beautifully animated. It's
really beautifully animated.
It actually kind of reminded me of that John Henry short that we had watched, the short animated Disney film. Why am I blanking on words today? Yeah, it was on the Disney Shorts Collected.
That's on thing. Netflix, actually, yeah, if you look for Netflix. Disney Animated Shorts Collection, Volume 1.
Yeah.
I want to say that the first Frozen short is in there as well.
And the Tangled one also.
Okay.
It's a bunch on there. It's very long. That animation of the John Henry reminded me of that animation of those workers putting up the tent, the very kind of like sketchy watercolor-y type of...
Yeah.
You know. It was beautiful.
I also thought that kind of struck me, the short that you're referring to, kind of struck me as unfinished.
It was. It definitely had like...
I don't know if like they were just like, hey, this is what's done, or this is how it's going to look.
I think it was how it's going to look, because before each short, they do have somebody talking about it, and they didn't say it was unfinished to my recollection.
Okay, all right. So let's... why don't we get into this film? Because actually, there are other things I want to talk about, but we're gonna talk about it as it comes up anyway.
Well, do you want to talk about money and stuff? Or
do I? Yes, I do. I wrote it down.
Yeah.
Thanks for reminding me.
Because I did find this interesting that it was only, second after Snow White to actually have a return before it's re-released.
Yup.
I thought that was really interesting.
All hail toys. Because without merchandising, true, Disney would have crashed in the very beginning. You know, it was a weird time also. It was a really weird time. There was a war going on.
Yeah.
It's hard to make a film industry grow when it's generally uppy cartoons when World War II is going on. That's maybe not the best thing to sell people at the time. So other things had to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so merchandising. Dumbo was made for a $950,000 budget. And
oh, really?
What'd you get?
Yeah, that's what I got too.
Oh,
yeah.
I got $813,000.
Oh, okay. I had two sources that said 950K. That was off Box Office Mojo. It could be inaccurate. I don't, you know, who knows?
Well, it's really not that far off.
Well, that was what it cost to make the film is my number. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the budget.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it brought in from the box office $1.6 million. Now, the thing is, we don't have real numbers as far as what happened post. It just, some films have that information, some don't.
Yeah.
This was one that I couldn't hunt down. So I am sure it's brought in more than 1.6 mil. I almost can guarantee you they made that much off of the VHS sales. Because if memory serves, when VHS first came out and you wanted one, you were paying a pretty penny. I remember my father paying $125 for Temple of Doom.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Every penny.
I know it was expensive, but I didn't know it was that expensive.
They must have not been that bad by the time they were coming out when I was younger, because I had every single Disney movie on VHS in like a nice little cabinet that opened up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Temple of Doom was, 83, I want to say? Yeah. Or, well, no, that was Return of the Jedi. It may have been 84. I'm not sure exactly when Return of the Jedi was, but that was right when things were starting.
Yeah, so maybe give another 3-4 years, and then they were like, hey, all my stuff.
Really, this kind of sucks, this quality. No one thought that until later. The movie comes in at a brisk 104 minutes, and let me tell you, roughly 15 of those minutes is, I felt like doesn't, it fits in the movie, but it also kind of feels like, hey, this is really short, guys. What do you got? Like, drunk elephant? Like, drunk elephant. Yeah. Okay.
Good thing.
So,
I did read some interesting,
crazy.
I read some interesting stuff about the fact that it was only 64 minutes. RKO apparently had some issues with that. They kind of were offering Disney, like, look, either get it to the 70-minute mark, put it out as a short, you know, film.
Yeah.
Or put it out as a B film. And Disney said, no, I'm not doing any of those things. So RKO was finally eventually like, all right, we'll put it out as an A film that will run for 64 minutes.
Yeah. So there you go.
Could you imagine going to the movies nowadays, paying movie ticket prices, even if it was like a cheap $7 one, you know, on a Tuesday night, and only being there for like an hour?
You know what? If the movie's good enough, I wouldn't care. Give me a Pirates of the Caribbean film that's only an hour and 20 minutes, and I'll be really happy. Because guess what? Those films only need to be an hour and 20, hour and 30 minutes long. This obsession with making your tentpole films 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Look, I'm a huge Bond fan. I cannot wait for Spectre. That movie should not be over 2.5 hours long. This isn't The Godfather we're talking about. I'm not going to learn about 15 different characters. I want to see Bond punch people in the face, save the girl.
Use cool
girl
gadgets.
Then dies, feels bad about the girl, punches more people in the face. You know what? Actually, I probably can't watch that for 2.5 hours. Fine. Whatever. I already bought my ticket for that, too. So who cares? Yeah.
I just meant because it's like an hour. An hour and a half even, like, is fine. Just the hour. Like, I don't know. It just seems so short.
I want to say that the latest Winnie the Pooh film maybe went over 70 minutes.
It's such a weird thing because there's a lot of these early films that are like 70. I know Sleeping Beauty, for instance, is only 72 or 74.
Okay.
So it's like I'm not straight up against like the 70 minute mark either. It's just like the extra 10 minutes. I don't know. It does feel a little weird.
Well, you can always also fix that up if you play it with a short.
That's true.
That's a good way of making that feel like a more full experience. And I've really enjoyed the fact that Disney has reintroduced the shorts into their feature releases. I think it's been a great thing. And then it's a further incentive when that movie comes out on Blu-ray and whatnot to then continue that and say, like, hey, well, you know what? We have another short. And this one's a little more tied to the movie normally.
Yeah.
You know, the recent release this week of Inside Out is obviously the best example I can come up with right off the top of my head. We get her first date. Riley's first date, which, you know, we're going to pick that up on 3D because we didn't get to see it in 3D in the theater, so we get to watch it at home.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, it's $28 because they wonder why 3D doesn't sell well in the States. Anyways, all right, so you guys want to go towards the film now, or do you have any more background, Melissa? You look like you were about to say something.
No, I was going to say we're good.
Oh, you're good? Brian?
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Yeah, Brian. Flyball.
God.
All right, so opening up, we have the Stork Song, which I thought was pretty fun. A rainy opening, a narrator, which I also kind of liked. I liked the idea of a narrator on this film. I hadn't watched this film for a long time.
Yeah, me too.
So there was a lot of stuff that I was like, oh, okay, I don't remember this at all. This is one of it, the opening.
Yeah.
All takes place in Southern Florida.
Which you can clearly see.
Yeah. It's pretty good. That's what maps look like when you're up in the sky. If anyone looks out of the plane, it's pretty much a one-to-one representation. You know, we see all the animals basically receive their little stork, except for Elephant Mama, which is Mrs. Jumbo.
Yeah.
Mrs. Jumbo, whom has one line of dialogue in the whole film.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice it.
Says Dumbo.
It just says the name.
That's it.
No.
Jumbo. Thank you. Yeah, it says Junior. Jumbo Jr. And then Dumbo has no lines.
Yeah, he's silent.
So that's pretty interesting. Like, your two main-ish characters, once Timothy comes in, you know, then that's about it.
Yeah. Which makes sense for Dumbo because he's a baby. So, I mean, it's kind of okay that he doesn't talk.
It's fine.
It's interesting. I didn't realize that she didn't talk that much.
You know, that's it. She has that one line and that is it. And I think that's a testament to the film. Dumbo doesn't have to talk. You know everything from the face, from the animation. It's all told to you. He doesn't have to say, I miss my mommy.
Yeah.
No, just those big, cute little teardrops always coming down his face.
Yep. I always thought she had more lines of dialogue because I thought she sang that song to him later. In my memory, she sang that to him.
No, I did too, but it's not. It's not. Really just a voiceover collective song. I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And, well, no, that's in a later scene. Yeah. We get introduced to Casey Jr., and we get the Casey Jr. song, and this is a nice tie back to The Reluctant Dragon.
Yeah, as soon as I saw that, I was like, this is good.
It's interesting watching these things in order,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah, and now it was cool, because now I knew how he made that noise, how they made the Casey yeah. Jr. noise. You what know, was that thing that they used again?
Sonovox.
Sonovox. Yeah. God, such an old word.
Yeah, it's like, look at this new tech.
Sonovox. I thought it was really interesting also, when they're pulling away, you see the name of the circus, it's WDP Circus. Walt Disney Productions. Circus. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I noticed that in the background. Okay. I thought that was pretty... That's when I rewound it in the beginning. Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. We got our stork now, of course, voiced by Sterling Holloway, who you may know from many of things like Winnie the Pooh,
yep.
Cheshire Cat, Ka. He is a Disney stalwart. He also is a really, really creepy Twilight Zone episode. If you've never actually seen what Sterling Holloway looks like, he looks exactly the way you think he would look, which is kind of creepy. And he is a TV repairman. And the TV is like showing the future. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. That's him. That's super creepy.
Yeah, it's really good. Something I noticed in this, when he drops off Dumbo and whatnot, or Jumbo, whatever, we'll call him Dumbo. They sing the happy birthday song.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Which, until recently, was copyrighted
mm-hmm.
out of really the sheer dumbness of copyright laws. So I was like, did they pay a ton? Or at this time, was it still murky whether or not people were charging for that song? Because I want to say didn't pay a lot of money.
Yeah, like, that doesn't make sense. They didn't shell out for that.
So this is one of the rare times where, you know, happy birthday song appears in a film and it doesn't have a huge check, you know, thrown onto it. If you look for it in a lot of movies, they don't sing happy birthday a lot of times. Yep. They'll throw in little stupid things. There's even, I said this a couple of days ago, Saving Sarah Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part when Jason Segel says, "Oh, the weather outside is weather." That's because if he said frightful, he would have had to pay for it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he just said weather. Arrested Development had the same stupid thing when they sang "We're in a Yellow Boat" instead of you know, Yellow Submarine. Again, because Beatles is like $1 million for a second of audio. It's insane. So I thought that was, I don't know, it was a stupid little thing, but I thought that was pretty interesting. So we get Jumbo. We get introduced to Jumbo, and it's like the most adorable animation on Earth.
Yeah, he is the cutest thing. And you could tell, because even then you have all the other elephants, you know, all the other females being like, "Oh, he's so cute." Like, yeah. You know, the proper response to a child. But I read that the way they were kind of able to focus more on the character animation was that they used, you know, less detail in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like anything is lost, because if anything, now you're so focused on the animation of the characters that it sucks all your attention in, and now you're just enamored by this little thing.
Yeah, I'll be honest, yeah. I don't remember a lot of the backgrounds.
Well, yeah, I don't know if that's why they did it, or it was probably
a cost cut.
It was definitely a cost cut, but yeah. Now you're able to.
But
now, really,
yeah, that. But it had an unintended consequence, maybe, of letting you focus more on the actual character.
Yeah, like a happy well, not a happy mistake, because that's, you know, something that happens on accident. But
yeah,
it works out in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
The female elephants, who then, you know, when his big ears are revealed, they're the ones who named him Dumbo. This was not something that I remembered.
Yeah, I didn't remember. I didn't remember that she was Mrs. Jumbo either, so that all kind of...
Yeah, that I didn't remember. And Jumbo Jr. was weird because he was a boy. I just thought that was weird.
Why?
Because she's Mrs. Jumbo and he... like,
that's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? I just thought that was a little strange, but whatever. It's all right.
Yeah, it's weird.
There's few characters in films that I hated more instantly than these female elephants.
Yeah, which is interesting because the lead elephant, that actress, is also like Disney royalty. She has a ton of credits to her name, and none of them are really as negative. Like, she does Flora.
It's voiced by Verna Felton.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, you were saying, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I had it written down, but I couldn't find where I wrote it. Oh, yeah, there it is. Verna Felton, yeah. I mean, she did do... the fairy godmother from Cinderella. She did Flora from Sleeping Beauty. She did do another elephant, Winifred, in Jungle Book.
Okay.
But she also did, now I'm looking, she did do Queen of Hearts.
Did the Queen
and
of Hearts.
Aunt Sarah from Lady and the Tramp with the Siamese cats.
Yeah.
Who was a bit of a meanie, too.
She's kind of... you know, three
she's,
on.
Yeah, she's
right
half.
In the middle. She is, you know, a little.
I guess my heart holds out for Flora.
Yeah, but she can really twist her voice.
Yeah, because, it was not instantly recognizable.
Yeah, and I like her name. Just her character name is Elephant Matriarch.
No.
Which just sounds like you want to slap her immediately. This is also a pretty interesting scene because from a storytelling point of view, this establishes the Mrs. Jumbo is having a temper. I put that in quotes.
Yeah.
The way that she reacts, you know, like basically smacks. Doesn't she smack one of the women? Yeah, she smacks her with a trunk.
She closes the, she turns the thing and it closes down the, like the door and smacks her in the face. Yeah.
So you hear one of them, I believe it's Verna Felton's the Patriarch, saying like, what a temper on her or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Which comes into play later in the film with, you know, with the mad elephant. Going from that, we do go into our nighttime sequence, and it is the Roustabout song that we were talking about earlier. I don't know. I can see where people definitely can maybe get a little sensitive to this one. There is, if you take wording the certain way and add it together with what you're being shown and how all the characters share one very particular characteristic, and it's like, we get paid and we throw our money away. And, you know, it's a little weird. It's a product of its time that doesn't excuse it, but it is a product of its time, I believe. But, wow, thank God that time has passed. Well, no, not totally. So,
at least in the movies.
Yeah, you sure about that? I think
at least in the Disney movies.
I have to really think about that.
Okay.
Now I'm sure that they're a lot more. They're maybe a little hyper aware.
Yeah.
Of not wanting to offend anyone ever.
Yeah.
Which can lead to some pretty bland material now and then, but they've been doing fine, very fine recently, in my opinion.
Yeah, I liked this scene. It was really cute. I liked how Dumbo was helping out his mom, but he was still, like, you know, clumsy and, you know, always wanted to be near her, but then he got frightened of the lightning. I don't know. It was just really adorable.
Yeah, it just makes you love the character.
Yeah.
You know, it's everything that just leads you up into just loving this character. Again, not speaking a word. Very Wall-E.
Yes,
definitely. You know,
very Wall-E. We get our a big parade now happens, and the next scene is they basically come into town where most of our story is now going to take place. Mm-hmm. You know, this is kind of the main town, I believe so. I don't remember them moving again.
No, I think it all takes place in the
same
place.
Right, this is kind of where they settle up for the remainder of the film.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I believe so. Okay.
I just thought after the tent came down that they might have moved to a different location.
They do move later on, you're right. After the Elephant Pyramid and Dumbo wrecks everything, there is a shot of them moving town to town, actually. So I take that back. But after a little parade, we get the bath sequence. I don't know why, but this really reminded me of Fantasia. I felt like this could have been a segment in Fantasia because it moves to the music. There are no words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's something about it that made me think of the Dancing Mushrooms. I don't know why. I think it was just because we were focusing on one particular character and it was like a cute character and all that workings.
Maybe the bubbles, like the colors. Because I know that like they kind of played with that, you know, just the very edge of the thing. And I said in Fantasia that one of the bubble sequences had reminded me of Cinderella bubbles. So this could have been kind of like similar, you know,
possibly,
animation
style.
Maybe
that's what clicked off the wheels in my noggin a little bit.
Yeah.
Then we have the cousins of what's his name from, Lampy from Pinocchio.
Oh, yeah.
Every kid, every human child looks somewhat like Lampy from Pinocchio in the early years of Disney. That's something I've noticed. I'm like, wow, same kind of almost bucktooth look. And
yeah, like doofy.
Yeah, same kind of thing.
Mean person.
Yeah. Man, this is hard to watch.
It is.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if it's just because we're watching it like nowadays, but I'm like, where are the handlers? Why is no one like telling these kids to not, you know, poke and prod the little elephant?
You can't do that. It's a customer. Customer's always right.
Okay.
Customer's always right. But yeah, I mean, we get our Jumbo, Mrs. Jumbo, basically attacking in hysterical fashion.
She kind of goes a little much, maybe.
Yeah,
well, she's defending her baby.
She probably could have killed. She killed somebody.
Yeah, I think she very.
I think she killed. Somebody.
I think she might have.
Don't touch the baby.
Yeah, and I know. I'm not saying it wasn't justified. I'm just saying that the response may have been somewhat justified as well. You know, if you, if people have it and you kill people, you still get locked up. So, you know, it's not like, no. No? Yeah. I'm just kidding anyway. All right.
Self-defense.
Self-defense.
Baby defense.
Whatever.
I don't know.
Baby defense. But this was, I mean, seeing her, like, get tied down and stuff was really hard. Also, I have a memory in my head. When I was younger, I saw footage, like old black and white film footage, of an elephant who went, who attacked people at a circus and killed a couple of people. Mm-hmm. And they killed it. Yeah. Like, it was by electrocution. And they had, yeah, they had, like, the ankles wrapped in manacles. Mm-hmm. And that's how they did it. And I don't know why, but that clues off that memory of me as a kid. And I remember that really upset me, like, a lot. Like, to the point that it still upsets me now, thinking about it. And I just thought that was nuts. I don't know. It was, it's a tough thing to sit through, but it doesn't shy away from getting that emotional response from people. You know, this is going to go towards our question, you know, one of our questions at the end, but
yeah, no, this is where I feel like the film really starts to pull on your heartstrings more so than just like, oh, he's cute. Now it's like, you're going to feel things.
Yeah.
All the feels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is also a lot quicker. I didn't think that his mom got locked up.
Yeah,
so quick.
It was. It seemed very early in the movie. I didn't think it was so early.
You remember it's 64 minutes.
No,
long.
I know.
And you're like, oh no, wait, this is 45% through the film already. Never
no,
mind.
But I don't even think it was. I think it was no, like it was 15, like maybe like 15%,
20 minutes. Yeah. Yeah, a third of the way.
A third
through
of the way through the film. Yeah. Okay. It's true.
So
right.
You know, it makes its time worth it, but there's not a lot of time. So now we have Mrs. Jumbo locked up. They repeat this shot. I don't know if anyone noticed that. It's the same.
Yes,
it's
the same
exact
shot of the mad elephant. Yeah,
there's no difference. They just use the same animation in this shot, and then the one what leads into Baby Mine.
Yeah,
but then they just paint, you know, Dumbo into it. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Because, I mean, it kind of makes sense because she's in the same thing.
It makes total sense. It was a cost saving thing.
Yeah,
and at first it threw me off because I thought, oh, it's a song now?
Oh, okay.
And then the song didn't happen, and my brain said, well, that's what it looks like. What's going on?
Yeah.
And, you know, everything was explained. Not really, but... So now we get our introduction of Timothy Q. Mouse, as voiced by Edward Brophy. The first person in the movie that stands up for Dumbo outside of his mother, and this is a very Jiminy Cricket type role.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yes.
Very, very Jiminy Cricket. I mean, he is the conscious... Of the conscious? Conscience.
Conscience.
Thank you. Yes. He is awake. He is a conscience of the film. And it works. It works again. The character works again. I am curious, though, if people, when they were watching this, they were like, hey, we saw this a year ago. It's the same thing, guys.
I don't know. It's, I think it's far enough that it's not exactly...
Because he's
rodent,
just like,
bug. What's the...
Yeah.
Because he's just
also
like
because,
a band leader.
Well, he's not as like... I mean, it's even weird because I remember that now Jiminy Cricket wasn't as sweet, but, you know, Timothy's not really...
Abandons Pinocchio at every turn.
Timothy's the opposite now because now he's, like, standing up for him and he goes, out of his way to make sure that Dumbo's taken care of, you know? So I feel like, if anything, the true Jiminy Cricket is worse than Timothy in terms of, like, taking care of their charges.
We'll see.
All right.
Well,
do you think that maybe, oh God, some stupid fan theory is going to be like, oh, you know what happened?
No.
Let me tell you.
No.
Jiminy Cricket met Timothy Q. Mouse, and he was like, look, if you ever like have to guide someone's life, don't abandon them every 3 seconds. And be like, well, get on then. Because it'll just extend the plot. Because really, Pinocchio could have been roughly 15 minutes long. Been like, hey, don't go there. No, really, don't go there. Okay. Dun, 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 dun. That's the whole movie.
I know. Well, so. Well, we talked about this Pinocchio, but I don't think I think they're different because I don't think Jiminy Cricket was actually like a person. Like it was like his conscience. So yeah. That's why, like we had said during that, when he goes away, he goes away.
Oh,
we talked about this.
Did I agree with that?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Go back and listen. Go back and listen.
So you think that Jiminy Cricket didn't actually exist?
No, I think he, you know how kind of like when you got like the devil and the angel pop up on your shoulder type of thing? I think that was basically kind of what Jiminy Cricket was. That was my take on it.
Okay.
I
do remember.
Because that's why
that.
He would always disappear when basically he started listening to Not listening to his conscience.
We have to admit something, though.
What's up?
If she would have been the one who said that, we both would have called her insane.
It's very true.
It's very true. You know what, though? You wouldn't have put it as well as he did. You would have made it seem worse in some way?
Shut up.
Yeah. Okay, going back to...
so they went to the well twice is where we're going.
Yeah, we're going... Yeah, a little revisiting over here. So now we really get introduced. I mean, we got introduced to the Ringmaster earlier during the thing, but we get the Timothy Plancy idea of Dumbo becoming the big act.
Yeah, the climax.
This was really the only moment of true humor in the film. There's not a lot of it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
I mean, there's some laughy parts with the crows later on.
Some laughy parts with the crows, but that's, I mean, this is really like the one big, you know, humor gag.
Yeah.
Because at first you might want to like clowns because they're funny, then you hate them. So all that goes away. You hate everyone else.
Yeah.
The mother's not in the film.
Yeah.
I mean, after getting locked up, she's on screen, you know, 2-3 minutes.
Yeah, just for, like, yeah,
just
the,
for
song.
The
song.
Just for the musical and then the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's not a lot of likable people up on the screen, but I thought this was a really fun... I thought this was fun. I quite enjoyed this, actually. So, we get the thing, we got to put Dumbo in the act, which that's a crazy idea if you're actually running a business, but whatever. So we get the circus act, and this is another thing. Was this ever a thing? Did they make elephant pyramids, like 7 elephants high?
I don't know. I don't know if that's tall. I think they have tried to put like an elephant on a ball, but an elephant on a couple more elephants on a ball is like the worst idea ever.
I don't think I ever remember them as like kind of like some elephants would stand there and the others would kind of like go.
Put their feet on their
feet
back.
Feet on their back, yeah, but like that's it. Not like
this was this was instant death to the audience. Like if it fell, it was really great. I wish it was true. If that were true, I would go to circus all time. From a really far distance, though, roughly 8 elephants long, and then I would take like 4 steps back further and be like, "All right, this won't kill me today." So, Dumbo comes out, trips
on his little ears.
Yeah, on his
big
ears.
Not ear, not little. Yeah.
My God, you cried?
No,
later,
I later cried
in the
later.
Film.
Yeah.
My goodness. I mean, I didn't, and I thought I was, you know, I usually do to this song. I mean, this was, all right, let's get to that in a second. So, Dumbo, you know, he's supposed to come out and have like a big moment in the show, but he trips over his ears, which is kind of a running thing in the film until he gets them fixed up, and wrecks the show. So now Dumbo is downgraded. This is during the traveling from town to town.
Yes. Yeah.
And they talk about how the elephants are talking about how Dumbo has been made a clown. Yeah. And they all agree that he's no longer an elephant.
I thought this was so terrible. Like, when I was watching this, I'm like, they are so mean right now. They're ostracizing him. They're saying he's not what he is. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. This was, like, really bad.
Yeah.
Those elephants need more of a comeuppance than they got. That's all I know.
Yeah, peanuts. They got food thrown at them. Which, I mean, like, maybe they were hungry.
Don't they eat them? So that's not really a punishment.
Yeah, like if someone came over and, like, threw cheesecake at me, I'd be like, fantastic.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Do you have more?
Yeah. But they need to get something done to them because they were just so terrible. And this poor baby without his mother, and now they're just telling that they're not even going to take care of him. Like, there's not even, like, a herd mentality. Yeah, like, we'll take care of our others. Nothing.
Nothing. They're professionals, though. They are professionals. They are.
That is true.
To the bitter end, they are professionals. So we see Dumbo now made into a clown. God, this is depressing. And then it gets really depressing.
And like every time they show him walking, he's always got the fat little teardrops. He's just perpetually depressed. It's so terrible.
It is. It's a very, very sad, sad film. It is the most emotionally damaging of the Disney animated films.
Definitely.
I don't think that can go. I was thinking, you know, I'm a big Superman fan, and the tagline for in 1978 when it was 77, I don't remember, when Christopher Reeve Superman came out, it was "You will believe a man can fly," and I was like, Dumbo should have been "You will believe a man can cry." That should have been like the tagline for all the posters.
Yeah, seriously.
So now we get, I would say, the most iconic scene, one of the most iconic scenes in all of Disney animated history, and Timothy says that he can, you know, go and bring Dumbo to see his mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we are then brought into the song Baby Mine, which is sung by Betty Noyes, who was the singing voice for Debbie Reynolds in Singing in the Rain, because that chick couldn't carry a tune.
Aww.
Yeah.
I did like that movie.
Little note for you.
Which is actually funny, because if you know what that movie's about, then that's actually really funny.
Yeah, it's ironic. It's a crazy irony, honestly. It's an absolutely insane irony.
That's actually really, yeah. Wow, yeah. Okay, cool.
All right, you cried really hard
at this
part. Yeah. Brian, I'm assuming you did too.
No, not at all. Not
you that. Are such a liar.
I can't attest if you cried, because I couldn't see.
No, you know what? You blubbering distracted me. Like, it was that. It was like.
I did not.
I was like, the dog wants to go out.
No.
No.
No. I had tears, but I did not blubber.
No, it was just. That was a heavy sniffle.
Yeah. Well.
It was a heavy. Yeah. So, Brian, you were crying, right?
Yeah, I was crying.
Yeah, I know you were crying. Yeah. I knew you were crying before I figured out she was crying. When we said 2 weeks ago we were going to do Dumbo.
This is a disturbance in the force.
Yeah, I was like, this boy's crying right now. Yep. This is one of the saddest damn things on earth. There's just no getting around it.
I mean, and it's not even like the entire song is like just sad lyrics, but it's just like, it's so soft.
Oh, no, it is, actually.
And it's her holding him in the trunk. Just like so precious. I don't know. And you get the really cute animation on him again because his ears are tucked away. I don't know.
It's just, it's one of the most adorable things. This is actually the song that I did not tell her.
Yeah, no.
But I danced with my mother at our wedding. I had told her it was going to be
wasn't it Beatles song?
Beatles track
and
in
then
my life.
I definitely remember as soon as the music came on, she hit you, which was fun.
Yeah, and then she was crying.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Just producing a scene. No, it's cool. we get the baby mind sequence, which will come up for me later on in the show. And then we get the let's get drunk thing. We get the, you know, we see the whole clowns, you know, the clowns working their thing and open up champagne. One bottle falls into
a bucket of water.
Yeah, thing of water, and instantly starts to bubble, which I guess would happen.
Oh, well, yeah, because it's like fizzy and stuff.
And then, Dumbo takes a huge chunk full of the water, which is now mainly champagne. And we get a very infamous, infamous. Infamous doesn't always mean negative. It just means, you know. But the pink elephant sequence.
Yeah. Yep.
This is long.
It felt kind of long.
It was longer than I thought, than I remembered.
Yeah, I'll have to look up the run times of the song, but I felt like this song lasted longer than Baby Mine.
Oh, it absolutely did.
Yeah.
Oh, no, absolutely it did. Very Huffalump looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
With a similar tempo.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, again, which would be elephants marching, that kind of idea, which it works, but it is kind of similar. This was the only part where, in a 64-minute movie, I was like, this feels like padding.
Yeah, it definitely did. It felt like they just put that in there to.
Because it had no other purpose in the film. Like, that doesn't change a situation. They don't wake up late the next morning and they're late for the circus or anything like that. It just uses some really crazy animation, because there is some crazy animation going on in this film.
No, I like
it, sequence,
though,
I should say.
Because you get the very heavy emotion from Baby Mine, and then this was kind of like a lighter, you can dry your eyes now because,
you
got something crazy going on.
No, that's a good point. I agree with that totally. It just felt a touch too long for me.
Yeah.
Just a touch.
Yeah.
And in a 64-minute film, nothing should feel long. Everything should just feel like it's, going along. And for the most part, it does. This was the only thing, maybe 30 seconds shorter, and I would have been okay. But I remember feeling like, all right, getting above that 60-minute mark, aren't we?
I just think in the beginning, I felt like the song should have started a lot sooner than it did. I think that's where it kind of lost me a little bit.
Okay.
Like, because I was like, okay, where are the lyrics now? Like, come on.
All right. Yeah, Pink Elephants on Parade. My one note, truly odd.
I liked it.
No, I liked it too. Scene 12, we get, at least how I numbered it. I don't know if anyone else does that. Does anyone else do that? I number every scene.
Nope.
We get the crows, which, as I said earlier, most of them, except for the main crow, which is voiced by Cliff Edwards, who sang When You Wish Upon a Star. So that man can obviously bend his voice to many different levels. But the rest of them were voiced by the Hal Johnson choir. Francis Hall Johnson, known professionally as Hall Johnson, I'm just literally reading like his wiki thing, was a number of American composers and arrangers who elevated African-American spiritual to an art form. He was born in Athens, Georgia. He attended Juilliard, which is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, for that time.
And, you know, he basically just started off in choral music and, you know, made the Hall Johnson Negro Choir back in 1925. And they, you know, did the sights, did the circuits, just bigger and bigger, did international tours of plays, radio versions, and all through the 1920s and 1930s. And that's where you get the rest of your cast of the Crows. I really like this scene. I don't remember, again, this was a movie that my brain kind of forgot, except for the very monumental parts. But I like these characters a lot. I was expecting them to be offensive, and I found them not offensive.
Yeah, I was really expecting it to be like, oh, this is bad. But yeah. It wasn't what I was
anticipating.
I didn't get that
kickback. Melissa, did you at all get that feeling?
Yeah, no, I didn't feel like they were offensive at all. I thought that scene had happened earlier in the movie, but that's
they're right at the end.
Yeah,
they're right at the end.
Look, full disclosure, we're white. we're probably not the ones really to get the opinion of whether or not this is racially insensitive. Like, we don't really have, you know, I would really love to get other people's, like Kev. Kev, who does a show with us on Film Basement, I would love to get his opinion on that. I have a feeling he wouldn't care.
But yeah, I don't know. I felt like there were a couple, like, quote unquote, stereotypical voices.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're offensive.
Now we get the really one of the other, you know, classic song from this film, and that's When I See an Elephant Fly, which, again, I didn't realize they were singing it so much in jest at first.
Yeah.
And it's only after, like, Timothy does a talking down to everybody, like, hey, you know, why would you do something like that, that they turn on a dime and they're like, you know what? You're right.
Yeah.
Let's see this kid fly. Yeah. Which is
mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's a little mind-boggling. It's like, hey, what do you want to do next? Jump off a cliff? Yes. Is everyone behind this? Yes, we are. Go.
Here's a feather.
Because there is no other way you got up in that tree. Which, really, yeah, I guess so. Why not?
No.
I mean, what other explanation could there have been for the elephant up in the tree, which I didn't remember that either.
Yeah, I didn't remember that. I also thought like the feather thing had come up like more, there was what?
I'm sorry, keep going. Okay. I'll say it afterwards.
Like there was more to that whole like you got to believe in the feather kind of thing, and then like when it goes away, it doesn't matter. You know, I thought that there was more of a build up.
No,
I haven't watched this movie in loads of.
Yeah,
had to work out that in 10 seconds because he was falling to his death. You know what? That's why the champagne sequence is there. You remember how I just said moments ago, like, this doesn't really serve a purpose?
Oh, yeah, because they wake up in the tree.
Yeah, because he drunkenly flies.
Yeah, he's not uninhibited.
So I'm an imbecile. That's 100% the whole cause and effect of that scene. The whole reasoning behind that scene is to simply get him up in a tree.
Yeah.
Because if that doesn't happen,
he might not find out that he could do that.
He may never find out, yeah. Or it would just have to happen at the very end, but out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And maybe as a viewing audience,
you feel like, what?
You're like, oh, wow, that's convenient.
Yeah.
You know, you never hinted at this before, and all of a sudden you can fly.
Yeah.
So that would be the reason why there. So Dumbo flies. He flies quite well on his first shot. Does a good job.
Better than Harrison Ford.
Oh, wow. Flying jokes, huh?
I like that, right?
All right. Flying jokes. All right. That way. Man, those posters look good.
Oh, they look so good.
The character posters for The Force Awakens. Oof, they look good. I really love it. I absolutely love it. Still not 100% sold that he is a Jedi. I think we're getting...
What about if they both are?
I think they both are.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I'm thinking they both
are. I think he kind of has to be because they've shown way too much of him with the saber.
Like, it's only one scene.
Yeah, but even in the poster, he's holding it. So if it was just the one quick scene, he wouldn't be in the poster.
I don't trust J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, me neither.
He likes to be sneaky. I wish he wouldn't try to be sneaky. I'd be like, no, you really, we knew it was Khan.
Yeah.
Like, you telling us repeatedly it's not Khan, we knew it was Khan. So when it happened in the movie, no one was shocked. We were all like, yeah, we know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyways. Yeah, Star Wars. So now we go to the circus and we get our final finale, our big action, you know, sequence, if you could call it that.
Well, I guess,
But yeah, this is our big dramatic point of Dumbo t- taking a very dangerous jump off of... Who is running this thing?
Well, clearly Pete is not around during this time because you're putting elephants in fire up on however many stories up, you know, and the clowns are like, let's make it higher, higher, yeah. higher. And they did.
Yeah. This was just... it's a dangerous thing. I don't know if this is a good idea for anyone involved. So he flies, though.
He does.
He does.
Thank God. That would have been a different movie. But yeah, very, very nice triumphant end. And then we finish. We're back on Casey Jr. moving to another town. And now his mother and him have a private cart, basically.
Yeah.
And very shiny cart compared to the rest of the other
train. Because it's all new.
Yeah, it's very nice. And she's just sitting there. And Dumbo is flying through the air with the crows and whatnot. And you know, friends. Yeah. And it ends on a very, very happy note. Although he is still traveling with people that, you know, just have meant no good. I think he just flies away eventually.
I don't think he leaves his mother.
No, he waits until she passes, you know, peacefully. You know, a couple of years later, they have a lot of fun together. And then he's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
And he's like, I'm going to go to Florida. And I'm going to become an attraction. So that's our film. It's so short.
It's so
it's
short.
Really short.
The whole thing with the feather, with the like that one part where Timothy's in his hat, like all of these things that I thought were like so much within the movie, like 2 minutes right at the end. Yeah. Like,
but boop. You know what? I'm okay with that. Because I thought it was great. I really enjoyed this. I don't know how much I would watch it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I mean, it's an uplifting, ultimately it's an uplifting film, but it's a tough sit. It's a sad film for 99% of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so I don't know if it's one that I'll watch very much, but I guess we should just go into our questions then, because that'll all go into really our closing discussion of it one way or the other. So let's start first with, what's the iconic shot of this film? To anyone who's new, and by the way, hi, to anyone who is new to our show, we noticed a bit of an uptick in subscribers and whatnot, and I'm assuming it's maybe because you heard me talk like a fool on WW Radio, so welcome, and I hope you're digging it and whatnot. We always go into iconic shot, and when I say that is, what's the image of the film that sticks out to you most? For an example, Fantasia, for me, it was Mickey up top of the mountain with his hand up in the air as he's directing the stars. You know, you freeze frame that shot. That is, to me, the iconic shot. So, Melissa, to you, what is the iconic shot of Dumbo?
I think it's during Baby Mine when he's sitting in her trunk and just kind of swinging there. That, I think, is what I think of when I think of Dumbo.
Okay. Brian, do you have a different view on that one?
Actually, no. I think of the same scene.
Oh, well, this is the last time we're doing this show, because that's never going to happen again. Because we all agree.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think that is the iconic shot. I know that posters, you know, that usually it's Dumbo up in the air flying, which seems like it's taken from the very last scene of the film.
Yeah, because yeah. Timothy's in his hat and stuff.
Yeah, that particular shot feather. And all that.
Yeah.
But I think that is the iconic shot of this film. I think it's the most emotionally... impactful, one of the most emotionally impactful scenes in all of animation.
Yeah.
Especially when just talking about Disney films. I don't even think that's an argument. It is.
Yeah.
We'll get to some Pixar films later, you know, later, much later down the line that hit an emotional peak like that.
But I've never cried like that.
Man, you lost it.
I really
did. You should have taped that. Oh. You should have periscoped that.
Periscoped that. That's a good idea, actually. Everyone's leaving the Periscope all of us. Actually, no one's really... the couple of people that we listen to, Lou's really focusing on the Facebook,
yeah.
Which I like more.
What is the Facebook
I do,
one?
But I don't sometimes, because the Facebook mobile stinks. Like, Periscope mobile was great, because that was what it was made for, but Facebook, I feel like, is so integrated in the computer that the mobile part of it just... It's so jumpy, laggy, freezy chat.
That's the reason why it's only a limited release, and only certain people are using it.
I know, but it stinks it's because bugs. You're trying to, like, you know... follow along, and it's like
yeah, but again, everything just trips out of the gate. It's just the way technology works. It never works straight out of the gate.
Is that what he's, because I keep seeing him like live on my Facebook
yeah,
feed, and
that's
why.
What it is.
Yeah, that's okay, what it is. Cool. That's what it is. So I've enjoyed those. I've enjoyed those. I think the chat's much better than Periscope. Immensely better. Let's get back to the aim of this podcast, though. Does the film hold up? I'm going to go to Brian first.
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. Like we've said before, I think some of the scenes are like a product of its time, and they're a little maybe hard to watch right now. But overall, and I mean, and the animation also is great, like on the characters. But this one seemed a lot less going on than Pinocchio and Snow White had. They seem to be the animation in that seemed to have a little bit more going on for me. So I don't know if it holds up in that sense as well.
So you're a no.
I'm a no. I think overall I would recommend somebody to watch. Like I think you could sit down and watch it now, and definitely take some away from it and still enjoy it. So yeah, okay. I'm gonna say yes, it still holds up. But out of all the ones we've seen so far, I think it holds up the least. It's the toughest
shakier one.
It's the shakier one, yes.
Okay. Melissa, same question, but in Greek.
I don't know Greek.
Very well. Use English.
Okay. I don't think it's as shaky as you thought it was. I do think it holds up. I think that the animation, while it's not as detailed in the backgrounds as I remarked, particularly in Snow White and Pinocchio, I do think that the animation that they did do on the characters, especially since now this is like one of the first animal-centric, pieces, I feel like that attention to the character ones really makes it jump for me. And I do think that story-wise, music-wise, all of that, I think it still holds up fairly well. And I don't think there's as many ooh kind of moments, in terms of like product of its time kind
racial
of thing.
Racial insensitivity.
Yeah, like I don't think there's as many of those as in some of the other ones that were kind of like a little...
Well, the one out of Fantasia was cut also.
Yeah. Well, that. Also the Reluctant Dragon, like, the
yeah, there
baby
was some, yeah,
Weemus stuff. But... yeah, so I think overall it holds up.
Okay, I am in the boat that this does actually hold up. I think that there's something to be said about a 104-minute film that moves along briskly, has its story, tells its story, doesn't feel the need to blow up its own story just to make the runtime longer. I thought it was interesting learning that they kind of fought for that. I think it does work. I agree with you, Brian. The backgrounds and stuff, it's not as immersive.
Immersive is a good
word,
yes.
It's not as immersive as the previous films, but I think that the attention to the animation on the characters is really standout.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dumbo is fantastic. Dumbo is beautiful. It really is.
He is one of the high points of animation in the studio, that particular character.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's hard to convey an entire story without words. And I know a lot of people, what about silent films? Silent films would throw up words.
Yeah, that's true.
They would throw up words in between to tell you the dialogue. This is a film that doesn't need it. You could probably watch this film on mute and you will get everything you need. Mm-hmm. You won't miss out on a single bit. So I do think that it holds up pretty well. And, yeah, that goes into my Disney Hall of Fame, Dumbo, as I believe it deserves. And obviously it'll always be a part of the Magic Kingdom, which is nice to see.
Yeah.
So did you guys have any last notes you want to throw towards this film?
Well, we have to talk about
Oh, God, I am a fool. Yes. Good Lord.
I just wanted to note Bill Titla was the animation on Dumbo in particular.
Huzzah.
He did a lot of great work.
Well played, old man. Well played. So, is this a morals film or is this an emotion film? I'm going to go first.
Okay.
It's both. This is our first one. This is our first both. And it makes it pretty clear that they're both. The emotion, I mean, obviously from what we've said, very, very emotional film, very hard emotional film, sad, very sad in many, many, many spots, and then has a, very uplifting ending and whatnot. So I think that it knows exactly what it's trying to do emotionally. It didn't happen on accident. This was a very, very purposeful story to be put in and the way that it's told and all that. And I do think it has a morals film. You know, it's about acceptance and it's about, you know, knowing your place and not worrying about what others say and sticking up for those who get ostracized. I think that's one of the bigger things is Timothy, you know, the Timothy Mouse is really one of the mainstays of that moral in the film, because it's about sticking up for those who get bullied. Because Dumbo really doesn't fight back.
Yeah, no.
You know, this isn't a film where he fights back. He shoots the peanuts at the elephant ladies at the end of the film. But for a large portion, he just turns his head.
Yeah.
And doesn't, you know, stand up for himself very much. And that, I think, is the big moral, is to be like Timothy and stand up for the one who is being bullied.
Yeah.
You know, and put yourself in the line of fire.
Yeah.
You know, to that effect. So I actually think this is our first combo film. We get both morals and emotion. Melissa, you go next.
I definitely agree. It's definitely both. Obviously, the emotion is clear from both, you know, happy, adorable, you know, cute baby to sad, you know, separation of mother and child kind of thing, and then back to celebratory stuff. But yeah, I do think the moral part of it is a big part of it. I do think that, you know, the whole, you know, accepting who you are, loving your imperfections kind of thing. Also, you know, don't bully, you know, not only stick up for those who are bullied, but, you know, you shouldn't do that either. And you kind of see how terrible that these, you know, people look just because they're making fun of a child. And I think it's even worse because they're making fun of a child. But, you know, in every, you know, aspect of making fun of someone else, it's just wrong. So, yeah, I definitely think that there's both sides to the coin here.
Okay. Brian?
I think you're both crazy. There's no morals or emotions. No, I agree also. It's a bit of both. You know, it's extremely emotional. You know, a mother's love and just that he's so innocent and, you know, doesn't know anything. And, you know, everyone treats him, you know, so horribly.
Yeah, no, you made me think of it, because even when, like, the kids were making fun of him, he was kind of, like, going along with it, because he didn't know.
He didn't know he was being made fun of with his shaking his, you know, shaking his head, and then the mom's the one who's kind of, you know, pulled him away. He didn't even know. He was so innocent that he was being made fun of, and he didn't even know. And you touched on it earlier with the crows, that the song started in jest at him.
Yeah.
But
a jaunty tune.
But a jaunty tune. It was. It was. Yeah, from that aspect, you know, it's extremely emotional. And the moral, you guys hit it on the head. It's, you know, to basically stand up for yourself and to stand up for, you know, less fortunate, but for people who can't stand up for themselves, to have some, you know, to be able. That's what Timothy Mouse was the voice for Dumbo, because he wasn't able to do that. And then he gave him confidence and, you know.
And then pushed him out of a burning building.
And then pushed him out of a burning building. Yeah. You know.
It's what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah, but it's definitely both. It's definitely both.
It's a bother.
The other ones were, the other ones that we have done were more clear cut. This was clear cut, but clear that it was hitting both
sides of the punching bag.
Yep.
So, okay, guys, that's our opinion on it. We'd love to hear your opinion. You can email us at, I have two email addresses. Which one do I have to tell you? You know what? Just hit us with a tweet. But if you tweet us over at DizMagicHourPod, you can do that. You can also make a comment on the Facebook page. That would really be the best way to do it, because then we instantly, everyone can read it. Because I'm the only one who usually checks the email, so it's not as fun. I do have a wee rant to go on. At the end here, and this is just because we know that Disney's doing a lot of they're doing a lot of live action versions of their classic animated films. Currently, Dumbo is in development to be one of these films, and it's being done by Tim Burton. Now, there are two Tim Burtons. There is the Tim Burton who made Alice in Wonderland, and then there's Tim Burton who made Big Fish. May Big Fish Tim Burton find his way out of the well that Alice in Wonderland Tim Burton threw him down. Because I do not want to see the Tim Burton who wasted my time with Alice in Wonderland. Because that movie for him should have been a home run in so many directions. And I know that it made a lot of money. Great. And, you know, whatever. Maybe the second one will be better. But I really hope that we get the more subdued but fantasy in a strange way, Tim Burton, the way he's, you know, nailed it in Edward Scissorhands. I mean, if you want it, you can write a lot of parallels with Edward Scissorhands, actually, in Dumbo, now that I think of it.
Yeah,
Ed Wood, but Big Fish, I don't know why, but Big Fish, the visual aspect of that film and the tone of that film really makes me feel like that's where he could go with Dumbo.
And he had, and that had a big, you know, the circus.
Yeah, there was actually, yeah, there was the whole circus aspect of that film.
Yeah,
brilliantly played with Danny DeVito. If you've never seen Big Fish, wow, see Big Fish. It's a great film. Another beautifully emotional film. That's a film that at the end cracks me.
Yeah.
When he says, the story of my life.
Yeah.
Oh,
my yeah.
God. That was Melissa crying.
Yeah.
So,
I wish this was a video cast so they could see the daggers I'm throwing at you with my eyes.
But I'm not looking at you. I'm reading the screen. So, okay, guys, that's it for us this week. You are listening to Upular by Pogo. You can find his videos at youtube.com/Pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix, and the home web address is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod. On Facebook, search for Disney Magic Hour and you shall find us. And head on over to iTunes, hit subscribe, hit that 5-star, and eventually go to Google Play and do the same thing. Again, reminder, Fantasia, next Tuesday, November 10th, 7 o'clock, Island 16. We will be there, or at least I will be there, and maybe other people will be there. What will I be wearing? Probably a Metallica hoodie, because it's what I've been wearing for like a week. It's really comfortable. So, anyone else have anything else to say?
Nope.
What's the next movie we're doing?
Bambi.
Is it?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. That's why I wanted a break in between, because this Dumbo and Bambi is super emotional.
Jeez.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so
I hope it's
we'll be back in 2 weeks to cry some more, yeah. I guess. So that ought to be fun. Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Pete. And say goodnight, Pogo.
That doesn't even rhyme.
Yeah, it does.
Bring it back, Alamai.
Boom, out of those.
Everybody up.
Go. Would you sign off?
Turn my cup, Alamai.
Boom, out of those.
Let me in.
Not for Russ, a weird. Bring it back, Alamai.
Boom, out of those.
Everybody up.
Go. Would you sign off?
Turn my cup, Alamai.
Boom, out of those.